It's Tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from radio's past. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Lefevre. Drama coming up in this hour. Later on, we hear part of the story of Dr. Kildare from 1950. Right now, it's Stars Over Hollywood with the story Fantasy Impromptu. Heard on April 12, 1952 on CBS with David Niven and Lorene Tuttle.
This is David Niven with a welcome to Stars Over Hollywood, presented by Carnation Evaporated Milk. Your host for Carnation, Art Ballinger.
Welcome to Hollywood, home and workshop of the world's most glamorous people. Each week, Stars Over Hollywood is brought to you by Carnation, the world's favorite brand of evaporated milk. And today we present Fantasy Impromptu, starring David Niven. Yes, it's Carnation bringing you Stars Over Hollywood. And speaking of stars, here's a man who commutes between continents and makes fine pictures wherever he goes. David Niven.
Well, thank you, Art.
If I remember correctly, David, the last picture you made in Hollywood was MGM's Soldiers 3. What have you been doing since then?
Well, to make it very brief, I went to England to make a picture called Appointment with Venus. Then I came back to New York and did a play on Broadway. Then I took a brief holiday in Barbados, and here I am.
Nothing about that new novel of yours?
Oh, yes, thank you. I'm glad you mentioned that. It's a book called Once Over Lightly, published about 2 months ago.
And from what we're told, doing very well, too. And now, Act One of Fantasy Impromptu, starring David Niven in the role of Eric Lindsay. Curtain going up. Jealousy, and the tragedy and torment it brought into the lives of three people. Eric Lindsay, world-famous concert pianist, Nora, his lovely young wife, and David Warren, noted surgeon and mutual friend of Eric and Nora. As our story opens, Dr. Warren, recently returned from abroad, is enjoying a reunion with his friends over the Lindsay dinner table.
Oh, really, it's amazing, Nora. 5 years ago, I thought I knew all there was to know about surgery, but all these new methods... let's not talk about me. I seem to have monopolized the conversation right through cocktail, soup, and salad. How about one of you taking over the entree?
Oh, but David, it's so interesting. I love it. Don't you, Eric?
Yes, of course. In fact, I was seriously considering performing a double suture pan on the roast beef, if I make myself clear.
Eric, I think you'd better just stick to a simple incision.
I must say, the closest I want to get to blood is medium rare. There you are, David.
Oh, thank you. Oh, it looks delicious. Oh, and Nora, if you still have the same cook, I'll probably overestimate my capacity as usual on this Yorkshire pudding.
Oh, you'd better not let Annie hear you say that. She'll dream up a steak and kidney pie that will really throw you.
Threatening me again, huh? Eric, did you hear that?
I heard it. You two must have enjoyed a few dinners together while I was on tour. As I remember, we haven't had Yorkshire pudding since Kate left. And Kate never could get the hang of Yorkshire pudding.
David had dinner with me on the 3rd of April. You were in Philadelphia, darling. I wrote you all about it, remember?
Oh, yes, of course. I fully intended to write and thank you for taking such good care of my wife in my absence, David. She has a wonderful memory for dates, hasn't she?
I couldn't forget that date, Eric. It was our anniversary.
Yes, of course. Well, David, I hope you enjoyed our anniversary.
Well, as a stand-in for true love, I'm afraid I was pretty much a flop. However, Nora is a charming hostess always.
Yes, I'm sure she is.
Well, and how was your tour, Eric? Flowers up to here, I suppose, and squeals of ecstasy from dithering dowagers.
That covers it very neatly.
Somehow I'm always sorry for the husbands of those women. They must find themselves utterly baffled.
Oh, no. I've met a lot of them. They're really good fellows, fundamentally. They just got into that rut because they don't like the idea of striking a woman.
Oh, David, don't tell me you recommend it.
Well, of course, not as a usual method of procedure. But some of these legalized parasites might have a little more respect for Papa if he came out of his corner fighting once in a while.
Well, then, Eric should be glad he's married to a woman who's very lazy and thoroughly contented to let him be the head man in her life.
Oh, dear. Just as I suspected. She adores you, Eric. Does she?
Oh, Eric.
Well, if I could ever be so fortunate as to meet a woman who would love me as much as Nora loves you, Eric, I'd marry her tomorrow and thank God for the privilege. Well, tell me about you, Nora. Is your book coming along?
No, David, I've given it up.
Oh, Nora, no, you mustn't. That's sabotage. The world needs your sense of humor.
Excuse me.
Eric, you haven't finished.
I've quite finished, thank you.
Oh, dear.
What's the matter with him? Or did I say something wrong?
No, it's just a sore spot with Eric. My writing. He doesn't want me to write.
Oh, but why, in heaven's name? You were a successful writer before you ever met Eric. It isn't taking anything away from him.
He thinks it is, I'm afraid.
Oh, but, Nora, I don't understand.
Neither do I. Oh, David, something has happened to him. Something vicious, unexplainable. If he'd only talk to me, tell me what's hurting him. Listen. Chopin. He always plays that when he's angry or hurt.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Behaving like a spoiled child. We'd better go in.
Yes. Let's go through here, along the terrace. David, wait. Let's just stand here and listen.
Yes, of course. You aren't cold?
No. Oh, aren't his hands beautiful, David? Strong and sensitive. Oh, David, I love him so much.
I know, Nora. Believe me, I know.
They're on the terrace. I can feel it. They're standing close to one another. Nora's shoulders touching his. I know he loves her. Perhaps she loves him. To take her in his arms. Oh, she's so warm, so lovely. Why do they torture me? Why can't they be honest and tell me they love each other? Liar.
Well, why did you come in? I know you're standing there in the shadows hating me, wishing I were dead.
Eric, darling, you mustn't say such things.
It's true, isn't it?
No, Eric.
I've watched you, standing together, laughing at the way you put it over me.
Now, Eric, you're not well. I'm afraid that tour has been too
strenuous. Maybe you'd like to have me put away for a while. Maybe you'd like to prove that I'm insane.
Eric, you mustn't.
Well, I'm not. And I have my opinion of a man who sneaks behind my back under the guise of friend.
I am your friend. But I'm Nora's friend, too, and you're hurting her, Eric.
She's hurt me.
Oh, no, Eric.
How has she hurt you? By being loyal, understanding, loving you more than a man deserves to be loved?
You don't know anything about it.
Please go, David.
Nora, listen.
It's happened before. I can manage.
All right. All right, Nora, but promise me one thing. If you need me, call me. Will you promise me that, please?
I promise, David. Good night.
Nora, I wanted to... What are you doing with that suitcase?
I'm leaving, Eric.
But you can't.
I can. I've got to.
But why, where are you going?
I don't know.
Oh, no, darling. Look, I'm sorry. Please believe me, I am sorry.
You're always sorry. Every time. And then it happens all over again.
But Nora, look.
I love you, Eric. I'll always love you. But you won't believe it, and it's no use going on.
But Nora, darling, please.
We haven't any friends, Eric. You've driven them all away. There was only David left. And now he's gone, too.
Oh, you can't leave me. Look, I've been working too hard. I'll stop, darling. We'll take a vacation.
I'm tired of your suspicion, Eric. I haven't deserved it, ever. And I haven't the strength to fight it any longer.
Oh, Nora, be patient with me, darling.
I have been patient. Maybe if I go away, you'll have a chance to think things over. Maybe you'll be able to see how near you've come to smashing something that could have been very precious to both of us.
I won't let you go.
It's too late.
Oh, I know. You're going to meet David. Well, you are, aren't you?
No, Eric. I think I'm going to meet me again. Bye, Eric.
Nora! David. She's gone to David. Nora! David! I know you're at home. You turned out the lights, but I know you're there. Let me in! I'll smash the door!
Hey, what's going on? What are you trying to do? Who are you?
Eric? Well, what in heaven's name is wrong?
Oh, David, you weren't at home.
Obviously not.
I thought that you and Nora... Nora, where is she, David? Where is she?
I don't know where she is. Now, look, Eric, you've got to get hold of yourself. This is sheer madness.
But she's gone. I thought she came to you.
Nonsense. Why would she come to me? Here, I'll unlock the door. And you come in, Eric. We'll have a brandy and talk this thing over. Wait, I'll get the light. There we are. You sit down, Eric. I won't be a moment. I'm sure things aren't as bad as you imagine them to be, Eric. Here you are.
Thank you.
Eric, your hand, it's bleeding. Oh, good Lord, you must have heard it when you beat on the door. Let me have a look at it.
It's numb. I can't feel anything. David, I couldn't hold the glass.
Thinking Nora has gone to David Warren, Eric, in a fit of jealous fury, has smashed his fist against David's door, severely injuring his hand. As our scene opens, Nora is talking with David in his office.
His hands were never meant for anger, Nora. When he smashed his fist against the door, he injured a nerve. It's paralyzed his fingers.
Oh, David. Won't he be able to play again?
Not unless he makes up his mind to try.
You mean he doesn't want to?
Now, Nora, I've done everything there is to be done from a medical standpoint, but I can't operate on his mind. And that's where the trouble lies now. Eric is obsessed with the idea that his hand is completely done for, won't make any attempt to use it. I thought perhaps if you were to talk to
him... Oh, I will. I hadn't gone away. Does he blame me, David?
No, not at all. In fact, he's pretty much ashamed of himself. I don't know when I've been so sorry for anyone.
I understand, David, because I know Eric. He's always tucked things away inside himself. Where is he, David? You're very quiet, Eric. What are you thinking about?
Oh, nothing in particular. I've been watching the light on your hair. I guess I've been thinking how glad I am you're here.
I'm glad, too.
Oh, I hope you mean that. I love you, Nora. I'm stupid about a lot of things, but I'm absolutely certain about that. I'd do almost anything to make up for the unhappiness I've caused you.
Even... Oh, Eric, won't you try to play again?
You know that's impossible.
I'm sure it isn't, darling. Your hand is ever so much better. David said so.
What does David know about it? Just because he's performed a lot of high-sounding medical hocus-pocus doesn't prove anything. It isn't his hand, it's mine. It's no good, Nora.
If you'd only try, Eric.
I tried. The day I came back from the hospital, I did
but
try.
That was 2 months ago. You haven't gone near the piano since I came back.
Oh, you don't understand. Don't you suppose I'd play if I could? Can't you realize I'd give anything to feel life in these useless fingers again?
Eric.
Music was my life, the only thing I knew. Can't you see, Nora? There's nothing left. Nothing.
That's not quite true, Eric. There's always something left.
Oh, life, I suppose. And sunshine. And God's in his heaven, all's right with the world, poppycock.
I wasn't thinking of that particularly. It's just the old law of compensation, darling. You've always been good to me. And now it's my turn to look after you.
What do you mean?
Well, it's just that... Well, I finished my book, Eric.
Your book?
Yes, Receipt for Loyalty, the one I started the year we came back from your London tour.
But, Nora...
I know, dear. You didn't want me to write then. Oh, you were very masterful. Well, I need to do it all yourself, darling. But now...
But now it's different. That's what you were going to say, wasn't it? I can't look after you anymore. I'm a cripple. Someone has to pay the grocer. That's what you meant, isn't it? Isn't it?
Oh, please, Eric. I didn't mean it that way.
Well, I won't let you. I'll take pupils before I let you support me.
Oh, why won't you see my side of it? It isn't as though I were going out to scrub floors. Writing is fun. I love it. And it's only for a little while. Your hand will be better any day now. David says it's
I don't care what David says. My hand is dead, Nora. Look at it. Dead. There's no strength in it. No, I'll teach. I'll put an ad in the paper tomorrow. Erstwhile genius, crippled by his own fury, will accept charity from aspiring peasants. I can still look after you, Nora. No, no. Keep the hand cupped. Like this. Loosen the wrist. There, now. Try it again.
Nora, hello. I was just about to ring.
I saw you coming up the path. Come in, David. Eric has a pupil. He'll be through very soon.
I can't stay. I was just driving in from New Rochelle. I ran out to see a brand new nephew. Little fellow looks just like me, heaven help him. Anyway, I couldn't resist stopping off here for a minute.
David, I'm so glad to see you.
Nora.
Let's go into the library where we can talk. Oh, David.
Now, Nora. Nora, you mustn't. Here, sit down. Oh. Now, listen here. I won't stand for any nonsense, you know.
I'm all right, David. Really? Can't a lady enjoy her own nerves once in a while?
I told you it wasn't going to be easy.
It's the hardest thing I've ever had to do. He's like a hurt child, David. I just want to put my arms around him. Cry until the ache is gone out of me.
I know. When you love someone, it's seven kinds of perdition. Just standing by, watching them break their hearts. Without being able to help.
He looks so tired, beaten. Oh, David, isn't there something more I can do?
Has he tried to play at all?
Not even once. I've listened outside the music room, held my breath, said my prayers. But the minute a pupil leaves, he closes the piano and walks away from it. Like a carpenter who's finished a job and put his tools away.
Oh, well, hang on a little longer, Nora. Something's got to happen. Oh, by the way, when is that book of yours coming out, I'm anxious to read it. My sense of humor needs a transfusion.
Well, it's out.
Oh?
Haven't you read the reviews? I thought that might be why you came, to offer sympathy.
Well, the reviews, they aren't bad.
Well, they're true, if that's bad. Here, read them. I've saved everyone. Just to remind me in case I ever again make the mistake of believing in myself.
Nora.
Well, don't look so miserable. It's quite all right. I don't know.
Oh, Nora, would you... Oh, David. I didn't know you were here.
Hello, Eric.
What did you want, Eric? Is the lesson finished?
Yes, the young lady wants to know something or other. Advanced instruction or something. I said you'd talk to her.
Oh, of course. Excuse me, David. It won't take long.
Well, David, I must say I wasn't expecting to see you this evening.
Well, I was driving in from New Rochelle. I just thought I'd stop by and have a look at that hand. According to my chart, it's nearly in condition for a personal appearance.
You know that isn't so.
I know it is so. Your hand is as good as mine, Eric. But if you won't believe it, there's nothing more to be done. And personally, I'm through with the whole thing.
Thank you for leaving off.
I haven't left off. I've got so much to say to you. Eric, look, you've smashed your own life, but why did you have to drag Nora along with you?
What do you mean?
I mean these reviews of her book. Good Lord, Eric, don't you realize what you've done to her? Here, listen to this one. The first three chapters give infinite promise of the brilliance we have learned to expect of Nora Mather. Eric, she wrote those three chapters shortly after you were married. She was happy then, madly in love with you. She believed in you.
And that's the most important part of life.
Now, look here,
no,
David.
Listen to the rest of it. It goes on. But somewhere along the line, the sparkle went out of it. And the subsequent chapters bogged down pathetically and sank under the weight of their own obvious effort to be amusing. That's where you came in, Eric. With your stubborn, maladjusted ego. You took the heart out of her. You left her with nothing to hold on to but the tattered remnant of a faith in
you. She doesn't mind about the book?
Oh, of course she doesn't mind. It's only a symbol of her love for you. But, Eric, she was brilliant. And you killed that when you wouldn't even try to play again.
I can't, David. Believe me, I can't.
Oh, I hope that's true, Eric. I hope with all my heart that you never touch a piano again.
You hope? David, why?
Because I love Nora. And that's my only chance of winning her away from you. Good night, Eric.
He's gone, David. I've tried every place he might be. I've called everyone he might know. Oh, David, it's been 3 weeks. Thank you for driving me, David. You shouldn't have bothered. You're so busy.
Oh, nonsense. You don't think I'd let you drive all the way up to the lake by yourself? Why do you think we'll find him here?
It's my last hope, David. We spent our honeymoon here. It was the beginning of happiness. He played for me, everything I loved. Look, David, look. Lights. There's a light in the cottage.
Oh, Nora, please, it might be someone else.
No! No, it's Eric. Listen, David, listen, he's playing. Eric's playing. Oh, thank you, David, thank you.
Nora! Nora, you came.
Yes, Eric, I came. Because I wanted to be with you.
Oh, my darling. Oh, I've made such a mess of things. It wasn't my hand that was hurt. It was my thinking and my mind.
Don't say anything, Eric, don't. Because they're both well now. Oh, please. Just play for me.
All right. Says better than I can that I'll love you, my darling, forever.
And so the curtain comes down on the final act of this week's Stars Over Hollywood show, as presented by Carnation Evaporated Milk and starring David Niven. In just a moment, we'll have news about next week's show. Meantime, how about a curtain call, David Niven?
Right, Art. Especially since it gives me a chance to remind my two small boys listening that if there's no piano practice today, there'll be no porridge tonight.
How old are David and Jamie, by the way?
Well, David's 9 and Jamie's 6, Art. Oh, here's a snapshot I took in the yard last weekend.
Say, now there are a couple of huskies, David. They have all the earmarks of having been raised on carnation milk. At this point, David, we'd like to show our appreciation for your fine performance today by giving you this bouquet to take home to your lovely wife. Red and white carnations, just like those pictured on every can of carnation evaporated milk.
Well, thank you, Art. That's very kind. And right now, I'd like to ask you what you plan for next week's show.
Our star on next Saturday's Stars Over Hollywood show will be Honest Harold himself.
Which could only mean my friend Hal Perry.
Right, David, and he's doing a very amusing piece called Cupid is a Hobo.
Well, I'll be listening. But for now, it's goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, David Niven. The story on today's Stars Over Hollywood was written by Barbara Barry. Supporting Mr. Niven were Loreen Tuttle and Larry Dobkin. Music was composed and directed by Rex Corey. The program was directed by Don Clark. Later.
Ladies, when you shop for groceries today, be sure to have Carnation, the world's favorite brand of evaporated milk, on your shopping list. And now for the Carnation Company and Stars Over Hollywood, this is Art Ballinger suggesting that you be sure to see the George Burns and Gracie Allen television show brought to you by Carnation Evaporated Milk. Tune in every Saturday and hear the world's greatest motion picture stars in person on Stars Over Hollywood.
Stars Over Hollywood on Tuned to Yesterday from April 12, 1952 on CBS. And that same year, David Niven was seen often on television. In programs like Hollywood Opening Night, Chesterfield Presents, and Robert Montgomery Presents, he would end up co-owning a television production company, notably producing The Star and the Story, where Henry Fonda hosted all 35 broadcasts. It's an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levionier. Now we hear actress Lorraine Tuttle again joining the cast of The Story of Dr. Kildare, along with leading men Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore, from May 31, 1950, from MGM syndication.
The Story of Dr. Kildare.
Whatsoever house I enter, there will I go for the benefit of the sick. Whatsoever things I see or hear concerning the life of men, I will keep silence thereon, counting such things to be held as sacred trusts. I will exercise my art solely for the cure.
The Story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer brought you those famous motion pictures. Now this exciting, heartwarming series is heard on radio. In just a moment, The Story of Dr. Kildare. And now The Story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres as Dr. Kildare and Lionel Barrymore as Dr. Gillespie.
Blair General Hospital, one of the great citadels of American medicine. A clump of gray-white buildings planted deep in the heart of New York, the nerve center of medical progress, where great minds and skilled hands wage man's everlasting battle against death and disease. Blair General Hospital, where life begins, where life ends, where life goes on.
Dr. Kildare, there's a Mr. Brennan here to see you.
Brennan? I don't recall
any. He said he's from your hometown. He's a boy about 20 years old.
Oh, sure, Dick Brennan. Lives on a farm up there with his grandparents. Send him in, Parker.
All right, Dr. Kildare. Just go right in, Mr. Brennan.
Thanks. Dick, well, talk about surprises.
How are you, Dr. Kildare?
You know, I couldn't even place your name for a moment.
Well, it's been quite a while, all right. 3 years or so.
Have a seat, Dick. How's everything up in Dartford?
Okay, well, I guess. I've been down here for a couple of months.
Oh?
Dr. Kildare, I'm in a jam.
Jam?
Yeah, about 2 hours ago, I stole $5,000.
Well, maybe you'd better tell me about it.
I got fed up with the farm, Dr. Kildare, so I came down here to look for a job. I didn't find one, and I ran out of money a few days ago. Had to give up my room this morning.
So?
Yesterday, I phoned up Kessel and Conrad. They're importers. They had a help wanted ad in the paper. And this Mr. Kessel told me on the phone to come in at 10 o'clock this morning, so that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little shop down south of Wall Street. There wasn't anybody in the front, so I walked back to the office, and that was empty, too.
Oh, then what?
You see, this safe was there, standing wide open, and the money was in plain sight. I didn't even stop to think. Well, I took it and walked out. That's all.
That's all? Well, what else could you have done besides set the building on fire?
I don't know why I did it. I'm sorry, Dr. Kildare, but I don't know who else to come to.
Dick, your granddad built me the first bobsled I ever had. Used to coast down that hill below the dam, remember?
Sure.
If he found out about this, it'd kill him.
You can't find out. Something's got to be done about it.
Well, I'm not sure anything can be done. Depends entirely on the shop owner.
But Dr. Kildare, I'm in a spot. You're the only one I can turn to.
All right, Dick. All right. I'll see what I can do.
Now, Kildare, there's no reason why you have to go out somewhere right this minute. I want to talk over these charts with you.
Well, this won't take long, Dr. Gillespie. I ought to be back here within an hour.
Well, what is it that's so confounded important it can't wait 20 minutes?
Oh, it's just a business matter. Nothing really important, you know, but I guess I'd better get it over with.
Jimmy, what are you up to?
Up to? Why, nothing. Nothing at all. Oh, hello, Parker.
I got that Brennan boy put to bed down in 417, Dr. Kittle.
Oh, you did.
But I'll need a little more information on the case, though, before I can fill out...
What Brennan boy is this, Kildare?
Just a kid from back home. He came in a while ago.
What's wrong with him?
Well, he's entered for observation.
Observation? Confound it. What do you think's wrong with him?
Well, it's complicated, Dr. Gillespie. I'll discuss the whole thing with you when I get back.
Yeah, now, wait a sec.
This won't take very long.
Parker, he's up to something.
Oh, well, now, I wouldn't say that's true, necessarily.
You didn't say it. I did. You wouldn't have sense enough to realize it.
Well,
never mind now, Parker. Shut up and see if you can find my hat.
Castle and Conrad, importers. Should be it.
I'm sorry, mister. The shop's closed for the afternoon.
Oh, yes, I know, officer. But...
Well, Dr. Kildare. Say, I haven't seen you since you took that slug out of Dan Cassidy. How have you been?
I'm fine, Captain Daggett. Are you in charge of this case?
Yeah, that's right. How did you know about it? Hasn't hit the papers yet.
Because I brought the money back.
What?
Here you are. $5,000.
I see. $5,000, huh? What about the kid? Is he with you?
Kid? What kid?
Kid that stole it. Kessel gave me a pretty good description of him. Around 19 to 20, 160 pounds, light brown hair, gray suit, blue tie. Am I close?
I guess maybe I'd better have a talk with the owner.
Yeah, I think maybe you better. Especially since it's $50,000 it's missing.
$50,000?
Oh, Mr. Kessel! Could you step out here a minute, please?
Yeah.
Neither one of the old boys trust the banks. Do most of their business in cash. Kessel's the partner the kid stuck up.
Oh, wait a minute.
Was I correct, Captain Daggett, in believing I heard you call me?
Yes, that's right, Mr. Kessel. Mr. Kessel, this is Dr. Kildare from Blair Hospital.
How do you do, Doctor?
How are you, sir?
Kildare is a first-class doctor, but he's got a bad habit of sticking his neck out for people. He brought back $5,000 of your money.
$5,000? May I inquire as to the whereabouts of the rest of it, Dr. Kildare?
Oh, yes, you may inquire, but I'm afraid I can't tell you at the moment.
Mr. Kessel, I wonder if you'd tell Dr. Kildare briefly just what happened here this morning?
Again?
What if you don't mind?
Well, my partner, Benjamin Conrad, went down the street for coffee about 10 o'clock. A few minutes later, this boy came in and walked back towards the office. As I came out to meet him, I saw he had a gun in his hand.
A gun?
He made me open the safe and then forced me into a closet and shut the door. It has a snap lock, you know. It can't be opened from the inside.
And you were locked in for about 20 minutes. Is that right, Mr. Kessel?
Yes. Why, I might have suffocated in my heart, you know, and high blood pressure, as well as a thyroid condition. Oh, good heavens, I almost forgot. You'll have to excuse me, gentlemen. I should have taken one of my capsules 5 minutes ago.
Well, that's about it, Doctor. And Conrad got back and let him out. $50,000 was gone from the safe.
Well, that's quite the way I heard it.
Yeah, so I gathered. Well, I guess you'd better tell me where I can pick the kid up, huh?
Captain Daggett, I don't think I'm ready to do that yet. Not until I talk with him again.
Oh, now, look here, right?
Well, Dr. Gillespie, what is this, a medical convention?
How are you, Daggett? Kildare. Well, I just happened to be passing by and saw you in here, so...
You mean you followed me from the hospital?
Oh, ridiculous. I did no such thing. What have I walked into?
Well, I think the beginning of an argument.
This shop was held up at 10 o'clock this morning, Dr. Gillespie. Kildare is apparently trying to hide out the boy who did it.
Hey, that right, Kildare?
More or less. Seem to be two conflicting stories here. I want some more facts before I turn anybody over to the police.
I suppose you let us take care of the facts, Doctor. That's our job.
Only you've decided the case is solved. I'm not so sure.
Why not, Jimmy?
Because I simply can't believe that boy was lying, that's all.
It's not your business to decide whether he's lying or not, Doctor.
Sorry, Captain Daggett.
Oh, I give up.
Well, What seems to be the next move?
I don't have any choice about it. If Kildare sticks to this bullheadedness, I'll have to book him on his own admission as a material witness.
Oh, nonsense. He's not going to abscond with the loot.
No, but this kid that pulled the stick up might.
I'll stand good for him.
I'm afraid it isn't that simple.
But I'm afraid it is. Come on, Jimmy, let's get back to the hospital.
Okay.
Hey, now, wait a minute.
Now, if you lock up Kildare, you'll have to lock me up, too.
You know I can't do that. The commissioner's a personal friend of yours. He'd blow his top.
And you can reach either of us at Blair Hospital, Daggett.
So help me, if that kid gets away because of this, I'll run you both in.
Thanks for the rescue.
Hometown boy. Couldn't possibly be lying. Jimmy, why in the tarnation do you want to go out on a limb for a kid like that without even knowing whether he's guilty or not?
I don't know. Why did you?
Well, confound it. Come on. I got a taxi down here waiting with the meter running.
But I am telling the truth, Dr. Gillespie. I swear I am. Dr. Kildare, you just gotta believe me.
All right, Dick, take it easy. I don't know, Dr. Gillespie.
Well, whichever story you take it, it doesn't make much sense.
It happened just like I said. I didn't change one single thing.
If Kessel's telling the truth, Dick would have to be crazy to come here with $5,000 and ask me to try to straighten things out.
I don't know how he got my description or any of the rest of it, but I didn't do what he says. I swear I didn't.
There you are.
Well, Nosey, what do you want?
I just wanted to tell you that Dr. Carew's been looking all over the hospital for you, too.
What does that nincompoop have on his half-baked mind?
I don't know. He's bought all the evening papers, and he's just simply furious.
Oh, well, if he's only furious, let him work on it a while. When he really gets upset, he starts foaming at the gardenias.
When I think of it, I get so ragingly angry that I could just...
All right, Carew, go ahead and just get it over with.
A whole hour and a half simply worrying myself into a breakdown while you two sit across the street at Sullivan's Grill eating a steak.
Well, it was a thick steak, Dr. Carew.
And all these headlines staring me in the face. I tell you, it means ruin to Bear Hospital. Utter ruin.
Oh, now I think it's rather good publicity.
Good. Look at this one. Staff doctor at Blair Hospital involved in hold-up case. Do you see what they say? Involved.
Dr. Gillespie, that's a bad photograph. It isn't my best profile.
Well, how many profiles have you got?
Gentlemen, please. This is anything but humorous.
You're absolutely right, Carew. A picture like that, it's a downright insult.
Maybe I'll have to get a lawyer and sue somebody.
I have already contacted our legal department, though heaven only knows what they can possibly do. Dr. Kildare, how could you manage to create such a scandal?
Well, it was something like a snowball. It started very small.
Yeah. With a grandfather who built sleds.
Sleds?
Hmm.
I fail to see what sleds have to do with this.
Yeah. Dr. Kildare, that Brennan boy, he just up and left here without a word to anybody.
He what?
Just put on his clothes and walked out and then left a note for you.
Note? What did it say, Parker?
That he doesn't want to cause any more trouble, so he's... Well, how should I know what it says? It wasn't addressed to me.
Well, that's a great way not to cause any more trouble.
That boy you're talking about, why, that must be the criminal. And he was right here in the hospital.
Now, Carew, keep your vest on and your powder dry.
Oh, dear heaven, now the hat's on fire.
Crazy young fool, why couldn't you wait? I'll get it. Kildare speaking.
Captain Daggett, precinct headquarters. Well, Kildare, I suppose you know the papers got hold of this somehow.
Yes, I saw some of the headlines, Captain Daggett.
Yeah, well, they're putting the heat on us, so we got to have that kid.
Oh, when?
The commissioner says 9 o'clock in the morning. I'll meet you over there at the hospital.
But, Captain Daggett, you see, I...
9 a.m., Doctor.
Well, that's that. Daggett will be here at 9 in the morning to take young Brennan into custody.
But how can he take him? I mean, if the boy is... Oh, dear, dear, dear. For 30 cents, I could cut my throat.
You can get more.
Oh, dear.
You know, Dr. Gillespie, it might be a good idea if we went across to Sullivan's and had another steak. I understand the food at the city jail is not too good.
Now we continue with the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres as Dr. Kildare and Lionel Barrymore as Dr. Gillespie.
Personally, I think both of you should just stop worrying about it. My intuition tells me that everything will turn out for the best.
Pollyanna Parker has spoken.
Nevertheless, Dr. Gillespie, rely on a woman's intuition and you can't go wrong.
But you can go to jail.
Oh, pooh. Something's bound to turn up.
Yes, and that something is Captain Daggett at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. And when we tell him his prisoner has walked out, handcuffed.
Look for the silver lining, Dr. Kildare. Look for the silver lining.
Parker, I've enjoyed very few pleasures in my frugal and ascetic life. Would you like to do something for me to make me excruciatingly happy?
Why, of course, Dr. Gillespie. Just anything you say.
Then shut up and get out of here.
Oh!
And take that disgusting optimism along with you, little sunbeam.
Wretched man!
One thing in this whole mess that I'm convinced of. Mr. Kessel is lying about what happened. This was some kind of a frame-up, and young Brennan played right into it.
Well, it could be.
Either the two partners are in it together, or Kessel planned it as a way of stealing Conrad's half of the company's funds.
Yeah.
That could be why he asked Dick to come in at 10 o'clock this morning, the time when he'd be fairly certain his partner would be out for coffee. He counted on $5,000 in an apparently empty store being a great enough temptation.
Well, if that was the scheme, Jimmy, it certainly was a good one. I can't see any way to shake it.
Not unless Kessel could be forced to tell the truth. I wish I could give him a shot of sodium amytol and then ask him a few questions.
Truth serum, not a chance, Jimmy. You'd have to get his permission in the first place, and he'd never give it.
Not if he knew it, but there might be a chance. He worries about his health, thinks he has a half a dozen things wrong with him. Now, if he could only be made to believe that.
I'm way ahead of you. Way ahead of you, especially in regard to the ethics involved.
If it kept Dick Brennan from being framed into prison, I think the end would justify the means.
And if it didn't work? Well, what am I worrying about? I got nothing to lose but my professional reputation. Go to it, Jimmy. Let's have a real Roman holiday.
Well, yes, certainly you may come in, Dr. Kildare, but...
Thank you, Mr. Kessel.
I must say, though, that I'm mildly amazed at this...
This intrusion? Yes, I can understand that. Mind if we sit down here?
Well, I hardly see what...
That's right.
Now, look, Dr. Kildare, I'm afraid
Mr. Kessel, have you ever considered the possibility that you might be a very sick man?
What?
I realize you must feel a certain amount of ill will because of my interference this afternoon, but I hope you can forget that for a moment and consider my visit a professional one, if you will.
Dr. Kildare, what did you mean by saying that I'm a sick man?
I didn't say you were. I said you might be.
But...
When was the last time you had a complete physical checkup?
Why, it's been years.
Thought so.
It's my heart, I know. It's my heart.
Mr. Kessel, please don't excite yourself.
Oh, yes, you're right. That's very bad for it. I've been expecting it for years. I've taken pills to strengthen it.
Oh, the worst thing you could have done. A person should never try to diagnose and treat his own case.
Oh, I know. I realize that.
You can handle your own money if you like, but you shouldn't try to handle your own health.
Tell me, Doctor, is it too late?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that.
There must be symptoms, I suppose, that you noticed this afternoon. Just how bad is it?
I'm sorry, but I never venture a diagnosis in a serious case without making a first thorough examination. Now, if you'd care to have Dr. Gillespie and me check you over...
Yes, I would. I'll make all the necessary arrangements this week.
This week? Mr. Kessel, I don't want to frighten you, but I have known cases to end disastrously from putting off treatment too long.
You mean it's as serious as that?
I can only urge you most strongly to report to us at Blair Hospital no later than 8 o'clock tomorrow.
All right, Dr. Kildare. I'll be there.
Good. Well, now, don't worry about it. Once we get the facts, we can decide on the type of treatment that's necessary. With your cooperation, I'm sure we can find out all we need to know.
I want you, both of you. But no, you wouldn't listen to me. And now you're in it good.
Ah, take it easy, Dad.
Oh, I'll take it easy, all right. Commissioner or no commissioner, there are going to be some heads fall over this, and I don't mean mine.
Kildare, I think he's referring to us.
Then you think exactly right.
Oh, dear, dear. I just knew it was going to mean ruin, utter ruin.
Have another aspirin, Carew.
Thank you.
Now, come on, Daggett. Let's settle down and put this gown on. With a little luck, we may get this mess straightened out.
I'll have no part of this. I'm leaving right now, and I want it clearly understood that I am not involved.
You guys are really asking for it. You weren't satisfied with just letting a criminal escape. Now you've tricked Kessel in here, and you got him doped up with something. Exactly how far do you plan to go?
Far enough to get the truth out of him.
As a matter of fact, Mr. Kessel came here this morning of his own free will and asked for a physical examination. We're going to give him one, that's all.
Sure, with this truth serum or whatever it is.
Well, that's only a popular idea, Captain Daggett. Sodium amytal may deaden the inhibitory functions of the mind to some extent, but mainly it relaxes the patient, makes him drowsy and lazy. And under those conditions, if the questioning is properly handled, he may find it easier to tell the truth than to make up a lie.
Well, as long as you're dead set on doing it, maybe I'd better go in and keep an eye on you. How do I know you're not planning to cut Kessel's throat?
Pulse rate 64. Make a note of that, Doctor. Dr. Smith.
Yeah, let's turn back this sheet now.
How do you feel, Mr. Kessel?
All right, I suppose. Yes, I feel all right.
Good. Now, just lie back there and relax. Nothing to worry about.
Oh, nothing to worry about.
Would you hand me that stethoscope, Miss Parker?
Oh, of course, Dr. Gillespie. Yeah. Here you are.
Yeah, thank you. Now, breathe deeply. You ever notice any difficulty in your breathing, Mr. Kessel?
No, none at all.
I see. Well, what about business and financial difficulty?
No difficulty.
Some of these questions may sound strange, Mr. Kessel, but I'm sure you understand how important they are in solving your problem.
Oh, yes, I understand.
Good. Now, do you feel any pain when I press here?
No pain.
Here?
No.
Was this where the gun was pressed against your side?
No, it wasn't there.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. There really wasn't any gun, was there?
No, there wasn't any gun.
And what about headaches, Mr. Kessel? Are you bothered a great deal by them?
No, I don't think so.
Well, I thought you told us you had a terrific headache right after you took the money.
Oh, no. No, I felt fine.
Well, that helps a lot. Make a note of that, Dr. Smith.
Maybe the headache occurred after you disposed of the money, Mr. Kessel.
No, I mailed it in the box in front of the store, and I still felt fine. Mm-hmm. But I...
Now, don't worry about a thing. We're coming along fine. There's a definite hypertensoid, but it's not a serious one at all.
Oh, really?
Now, just a few questions more, and I think we'll have our finger on the right answer.
All right, anything.
Before we can plan any kind of treatment, we absolutely must know where you sent the money.
Oh, it was to an assumed name, Jonathan Bidwell, General Delivery, Times Square Station.
And it's still there?
Yes, it's still there.
Gordon, you got that down, Dr. Smith?
Kildare, you know, aside from everything else, this man has a perfect heart. Been listening to it with a stethoscope.
Why did you ask about... I shouldn't...
Now, relax, Mr. Kessel. We're going to put you to bed now and let you sleep for a while. And by the time you wake up, I think we'll have a cure. All worked out.
Yeah.
And now, once again, the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres as Dr. Kildare and Lionel Barrymore as Dr. Gillespie.
Well, Jimmy, one might say that we've had a busy and eventful day.
And it included getting out of a fairly tough spot, you know.
Yeah. I wonder if Kessel ever realized just how the police located that package of money.
10-1, he has no memory at all of our questioning him. As far as he knows, we made a routine examination. And come in.
Hello, Dr. Kildare.
Well, Dick, I've been hoping you'd come back.
I just saw a newspaper saying how Mr. Kessel's the one who's guilty. Is that true?
Yes, it's true. Of course, you did steal $5,000, Dick.
Yeah, I know. I ought to have my head examined.
No, but you ought to learn to use it a little better.
Dr. Kildare, if I do get out up, I'm going to go straight back home to the farm.
Good idea, Dick. Now go to bed and get some sleep. We'll talk the whole thing over in the morning.
All right.
And take the same room you had. Only this time, don't run away.
I won't. Thanks.
Good night, Dick.
You know, Jimmy, he seems to be a pretty good kid after all.
Oh, sure. He'll be all right.
Yeah.
He's lucky, too, in a way. This lesson he learned came out a lot cheaper than it might have.
Well, it's all due to having a grandfather who builds good sleds.
Forget that.
No. It worries me, Jimmy. I'm wondering how many other people may have built sleds for you.
You have just heard the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. Dr. Kildare is presented by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of Malaya, starring Spencer Tracy, James Stewart, Valentina Cortesa, Sidney Greenstreet, and John Hodiak. This program was written by Les Crutchfield and directed by William P. Russo. Original music was composed and conducted by Walter Schumann. Supporting cast included Virginia Gregg, Ted Osborne, Bill Conrad, Bill Tracy, and Herb Butterfield. Dick Joy speaking.
The story of Dr. Kildare on Tune 2 yesterday from the last day of May 1950, a syndicated broadcast by MGM. And that wraps this hour of drama on Tune 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levenier. Thanks for listening.